I'm ready.
Are you ready?
Are you ready for some football?
Are you ready for some sports ball?
Yeah. Not a lot of football talk in this one.
Not a lot of football?
Not a lot of football talk.
Oh, well, that's profoundly upsetting. So we're not going to talk about Marshawn Lynch?
Did he die?
Ooh, good point. We better not talk about Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, no.
You better not have any Marshawn Lynch news. Yeah. God, we don't deserve him. He's beautiful and wonderful. Fuck it. Let's do this. Podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. I'm Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. Max, how you doing?
Pretty good. Doing pretty good.
Yeah?
Very tired a lot of the time now.
Yeah? You had, like, you know, some earth-shattering, life-changing event happen this weekend or something?
Woo! Get engaged. So...
Ow!
We're really peaking the mic there.
Yeah, I just destroyed it, but congratulations,
sorry.
Man.
Yeah, thanks, man.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, it was very cool. Very happy. I love Katrina a whole lot, and I'm excited to plan a wedding in a very short amount of time, because Jacob is moving to Germany.
Oh.
Wow. My brother is moving to Germany, so I really got to get around that one.
Your life is really going to be flipped, turned upside down.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It's going to be wild, but it's going to be really fun. We're having a great time so far.
That's awesome.
As long as Joel Embiid and Carly Rae Jepsen both come to the wedding, they have been invited.
So if you're listening to this right now, Carly, Joel, please RSVP.
Get that RSVP in.
Yes. We don't expect extravagant gifts or anything for Max and Katrina's wedding. Your presence is enough of a gift.
Yeah, be great.
Yep. Okay, we'll see you there.
Cool. You doing all right?
I'm good.
Cool.
I turned 30.
Yeah, you had a birthday. That's
fun. Which is pretty wild. I thought I'd be dead before 30.
Oh.
I thought it'd be, with my, you know, reckless, fast living and all of the crimes I commit and hard drugs that I do.
The kicking.
Yeah, yep. Kicking.
Yeah.
Kicking bombs. Explosive things.
Well, I'm glad you're still alive and that you're still here.
Yeah, I feel you on the tired front. I'm a little sleepy myself after a weekend of basically just eating too much ice cream.
Yeah.
But yeah. We're gonna power through, and we're gonna make it through this episode. It's gonna be good.
So now that we got all that out of the way, all that fun stuff, let's get into our topic for today, which is still going to be fun. So Dorian, I know that you love video games.
Yes.
And I know that you love art.
Yes.
And I know that you love Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Are we gonna talk about all three of those things today?
Well, I know you love a lot of nerd shit, like, you know, anime.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Like, you're just kind of like a big nerd who likes a lot of nerd stuff that's, you know, not cool in high school.
Okay. I don't know if I like the direction this is headed, but I'm listening.
Well, you better hide all that stuff, because this week we're going to be talking about sports.
Ooh, jock shit.
Real jock shit. Yeah, we got to get, like, my old Jock Jams CD out. I think I was so lame in high school, I didn't even own one of those.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't think I owned Jock Jams.
I never owned a Jock Jams, but I did have a Best of Techno compilation.
Oh, boy.
And it got all scratched up, but my dad had, like, a CD buffer, you know?
Nice.
Like, did you ever see those things? They, like, resurface the disc so it plays well. And I was like, Dad, can you resurface this disc? And he was like, okay. I never saw that CD again. I think he just saw it and was like... Fuck that shit and throw it away.
Throw it away.
Possibly. It's still a mystery.
It's really good.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Good dad move.
Anyway, so jock shit.
Jock shit. Yeah, I, like, you know, I didn't grow up liking this either. Like, I grew up relatively similar to the same time you did. But I remember, like, the Coors Light football, like, and Twins commercials. Do you remember this?
Oh, fuck. I wish I didn't.
It was like a beer thing, and it was like, I love rolling in mud, eating pizza, and twin. And it was really gross.
Yeah.
Even as like a 10-year-old, I knew that that was bad and dumb. So I had like a sports Medneta for a long time. And then I like got over myself, and I realized that like baseball is good and basketball is good.
It's human beings not just waiting for some crazy fantasy situation, like when there's a zombie apocalypse, that's when I'm going to be an amazing human and do all these feats of strength and agility. They don't wait for that. They're like, all right, just arbitrarily, I'm going to figure out the best possible way to put a ball in a circle.
Yeah.
And it's just human beings wilding out and doing incredible shit. That's it. That's all sports are, yeah, if you think about it.
It's super cool, actually.
Yeah, it's neat. For sure. We're pro sports here.
Yeah. I mean, I know you're into fighting and stuff like that. Fight sports.
Fighting isn't a sport. It's a way of life.
Okay.
Douchey. Okay, I don't actually feel that way, but the,
there we go.
I figured it'd be a funny joke to put on the podcast, so please laugh.
There we go. So, you know, it's even now, though, fighting as a sport is surprisingly safe in the short term, unlike a lot of sports from the past. So, without further ado, we're going to bring in the Pre-Dead Boys crack into the topic moment. Grab this can over here. Oh, I kept them both over here.
Yeah, you hid my can away from me, and I was kind of worried for a second that you were going to ice me.
No.
Oh.
Look at the top of that before you open it.
Want to be a Goonis man?
Close.
No, I'm just kidding.
Doing it live on the air.
Hell yeah, I'll be your groomsman.
Sick.
Fuck, I thought
that,
yeah,
would be fun. Yeah.
Oh, that is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay, good. I was going to say you could edit it out if you were going to say no, but I'm glad you're not going to have to do that.
Max, we need to talk. We need to talk off air. I don't like you at all.
All right, cracking the topic moment. 1, 2, 3, go.
Woo! Oh, that was really cute.
Thanks, man.
Katrina, you landed yourself a keeper.
That means I get to check off your name in the Google Keep thing.
Yeah.
That I have.
In the document.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Nice.
That's fun.
Sick. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Lost my spot. Cool. So what we're going to do here is do what we usually do and jump back into the past to one of the deadliest sporting events of all time, the Roman gladiator battles.
Fuck yes.
So, you know, I didn't know this, and maybe they talk about this in Gladiator. I've never seen it.
You've never seen Gladiator?
Never seen Gladiator.
It's pretty good. It's one of those Ridley Scott movies that did not get mangled to shit by executives and whatnot. It's really good.
Blade Runner.
Holds up. Yeah.
So I actually didn't know this. Maybe they talk about this in the movie. But the origin of Roman gladiator battles was a funeral rite, which is pretty cool.
Hmm.
The precursors to Roman gladiators were this group of folks called the Bastuari. And their story is really neat.
The Bastuari fought on the funeral mound of a deceased person as a celebration of their funeral rites. At first, their practice was to sacrifice captives or slaves on the tomb. Their blood was supposed to appease the gods of the underworld and cause them to look favorably upon the soul of the deceased. In later ages, this custom appeared too cruel. To maintain the tradition, and instead of using slaves, they appointed gladiators to fight, whose blood would have the same effect. This custom would eventually morph into the full-fledged Roman gladiatorial combat we know today.
Yeah, it's kind of cool for a whole sporting event to come out of, like, a funeral, right?
Yeah.
Like, people were like, oh, we don't want to keep going to funerals, but, like, watching these dudes fight is really cool. Let's just turn it into sports.
Damn, that's really interesting. For all of my dorky knowledge of combat sports, I never knew that.
Yeah. Like, they would just bury the person, and then on top of the funeral mound, they wanted to soak it in the blood of, like, noble warriors. So they would just make people fight and, like, basically just douse the mound in blood so that the gods of the underworld would be like, oh, you must have brought a lot of people into battle with you, or a lot of people must have been willing to die for you.
I'd like to think that the gods weren't really tricked into thinking that. I'd like to think they were like, bro, that's fucking sick, dude.
Yeah.
See all that blood?
Just
fucking kick ass.
Here. Like Roman gods were just like Chet bros.
They're all Iron Maiden t-shirt wearing, like studded leather belts.
Yeah.
Old school.
It's cool guys.
Hell yeah.
So unfortunately, there's not any contemporary accounts of these bastouri fights, but I imagine they were like pretty conflicting affairs where you would feel very sad that someone had died, but also really amped to see two dudes just like killing each other on top of like your dad's grave.
Yeah. Yeah. I changed my funeral plans, by the way. I want two people to fight to the death on top of my grave because that's cool as hell.
I was thinking about this too. Like, what modern funeral practice is most likely to become sport in like 1,000 years?
Well, when we talked in our death fashion episode about the competitive corpse dressing, I think we're well on our way to see that happen, at least in Asia.
We're just going to be like Marie Kondoing bodies and trying to like fold them in the correct way, and whoever gets the most perfect fold is going to be...
Oh, I would love that. If it were less of a combat sport and more of a skill sport like golf or darts or bowling or something like that, that would be cool. I'd be down with that.
That'd be neat.
Yeah.
I like that. Be very silly.
It would. Yeah.
But, you know, like, it's cool that this funeral practice eventually morphed into the biggest sport of the ancient Roman world, which is kind of a crazy thing to think about. And if you're not familiar with, like, the intensity of Roman gladiatorial combat and how big these events were, here's a little update for you.
The term gladiator derives from the Latin gladiatores in reference to their principal weapon, the gladius, or short sword. They fought before the public in organized games held in large purpose-built arenas throughout the Roman Empire, from 105 BCE to 404 CE. Roman gladiator games were an opportunity for emperors and rich aristocrats to display their wealth to the populace, to commemorate military victories, mark visits from important officials, celebrate birthdays, or simply to distract the populace from the political and economic problems of the day. 30, 40, or even 50,000 spectators from all sections of Roman society flocked to be entertained by gory spectacles, where wild and exotic animals were hunted, prisoners were executed, religious martyrs were thrown to the lions, and the stars of the show, symbols of the Roman virtues of honor and courage, the gladiators, employed all their martial skill in a kill-or-be-killed contest.
Yeah, the first thing you notice here is how much death existed in these things and how much the community kind of came around it, you know?
Right.
I know you're a big fight fan, and I'd imagine a 50,000 person attendance would be pretty remarkable even today.
Yeah, that's absurd.
Yeah. So like the whole city of Rome coming out and watching like a bunch of dudes just fight.
Right. I think when I went up to Detroit to see a live UFC event, that was maybe the arena seated like 25,000, I want to say.
Uh-huh.
If that sounds right, it was the Little Caesars Arena. That might be the Red Wings Arena.
I don't know why I'm fact-checking you on this. I don't care.
Well, you watch some hockey, right?
No, not particularly.
Oh.
Yeah, that seats 20,000.
Okay, so that was a sold-out event, and that was half or less than half of the number of people that would be at a gladiator event.
Yeah. And so the full gladiator, where it was people fighting, those would sell out in a heartbeat. The other ones where it was just like, they would just throw some guys in the arena with like knives and then let like 20 ostriches in and have them try and kill the ostriches.
Oh, that's so fucked up, but it is so funny at the same time.
Those would happen like every 2 or 3 days.
Really?
Yeah, they had these events all the time.
Okay.
Because it was ritual. It was a way for them all to kind of get together and enforce like a sense of community in the area. And just like people kind of fawn over athletes today, there's been uncovered graffiti in places like Pompeii that are just like people saying that like this gladiator is really hot, or like Maximus is super hot. Just like carved into the wall of a Colosseum.
That's pretty cool. Was there any graffiti that was like, man, they killed my favorite fucking ostrich?
I had money on ostrich 17 and they killed it first. Well, that was another thing. People would like sell their lives to be part of this event.
Just to...
they would get really into specific gladiators.
Yeah.
And just bet like homes, businesses, even like sell themselves into slavery for specific gladiators.
Just to see them?
They would bet on that gladiator winning.
Oh,
like
they would be like,
if this guy loses, I'm going to become your slave.
Wow.
Yeah, it was wild. These things were crazy.
Yeah.
And then you see the stories too about them having like fake naval battles in the Colosseum, like them being able to seal it up and flood it to have ship battles in there.
What?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's wild, man. People loved the idea of coming together and watching things die in an arena.
Yeah.
Rome was all about this. And, you know, there's definitely like a distinction between modern sport fights and Roman gladiators, because you're not just rooting for someone to be killed.
Sure. It's complicated. I mean, like, if you watch combat sports, there's always a thrill of someone getting knocked or choked unconscious. Like, that is an ideal situation if you're a fan of watching a sport, is to see someone get their lights turned out.
Yeah.
Yeah, or a KO. Like, that's the, you know, in many people's minds, the most exciting thing to watch happen is when someone gets hit so hard that they lose consciousness and look dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that, as a fight fan, I have to reconcile with. I have a tension with my own fandom where it's like, if I'm honest with myself, I enjoy watching human beings get to the brink of death. And when I think about gladiatorial combat, it's not a stretch for me to think about, like, right now, sitting here talking with you, I would say that I don't want to see an event like this. I don't want to see two human beings try to kill each other. But I don't know that, like, if I would be contrary to all the people in Rome, I think I'd probably be desperate to see these sorts of events too.
And that's kind of one of the rubs about it, is that, you know, modern combat sports are, you know, kind of a fringe thing. They're not the most popular things in the world.
Right.
The UFC has a lot of negative stereotypes about it. It's not like everywhere like gladiatorial combat was.
Yeah.
You know, if you were in Rome at this time, you were buying tickets months ahead of time to get into these events. It was just such a central part of everyday Roman life, you know.
Right.
Even after gladiatorial combat moved from being a funeral ritual, it was still saturated with like really heavy religious imagery.
Vestiges of the religious origins of gladiatorial combat remained in the act of finishing off fallen gladiators. When this happened, an attendant would strike a blow to the forehead of the injured. The attendant would wear a costume representing Hermes, the messenger god who escorted souls to the underworld. The presence of the divine god emperor himself, accompanied by priests, also lent a certain pseudo-religious air to the contests.
Yeah, it's really interesting how the idea that like the religious rites at the funeral ritual where gladiatorial fighting emerged, you know, having to have someone's blood spilled to appease the gods, eventually translated to this cultural event where someone dressed like Hermes would come out and quote-unquote take the soul. You know, it's kind of a cool cultural metamorphosis there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I can't help but kind of be maybe a little cynical about it, and this is like wasn't the Roman emperor kind of like trying to convince people that he was also a deity? Like,
yeah,
is it still that time period where you were a deity? Yeah, I can't help but kind of think that this angles into that. It like works as propaganda a little bit.
Yeah,
when you're stating,
because he controls if you live or die.
Right,
that's the whole like thumbs up, thumbs down thing. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
It's really interesting, but as we're about to learn, the Romans weren't the only culture that fused death and sports. The Mesoamerican ball game did the same thing. And, you know, you might be saying, what Mesoamerican ball game?
The great Mesoamerican pastime?
Pastime. I mean, so this is something that I remember reading about as a kid in, like, Ripley's Believe It or Not pulp paperbacks.
Yeah.
And they would always call it, like, the Mesoamerican ball game or something like that. And I was like, what the hell is it named? And it turns out that that's kind of, like, lost to time. We don't know what it was really called. And even the Wikipedia page for these events are listed under Mesoamerican ball game, which is very silly.
Yeah.
But for those who are unaware of the Mesoamerican ball game, here's the rules of this other death-centric sport.
The Mesoamerican ball game was a sport with ritual associations played by the pre-Columbian people of ancient Central America. The rules of the game are not known, but they were probably similar to racquetball, where the aim is to keep the ball in play. Scholars believe the players struck the ball with their hips and aimed for stone hoops set high off the ground to score points. The ball was made of solid rubber and weighed as much as 9 pounds. The game had important ritual aspects, and major formal ball games were held as stand-ins for combat and warfare between people groups. As the history of the game progressed, some cultures combined competitions with religious human sacrifice.
And, you know, just so we're not saying Mesoamerican ball game from here on out, one source calls the game Pocklepock.
Pucklepock?
Pock-ol-puck.
Pock-ol-puck?
P-O-K-O-L-P-O-K.
Pocklepock. That's really cute.
You know, it's a very cute name for a game where you're essentially like bashing a medicine ball with your hip.
Right. And what is this about cultures combining them with religious human sacrifice?
Yep.
I'm a little puzzled about that.
Yeah. So first off, imagine that you are living in ancient Mesoamerica.
Yes.
Okay. Now imagine...
I'm there. I'm mentally there. I am the Mesoamerican version of me. I don't know what Mesoamerica is, actually. Help.
Yeah, like Central America, like South Mexico.
Okay, you know. But just like pre-colonization.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Now imagine that you are completely naked, except for a loincloth.
Nice.
And that someone is hurling a medicine ball at your hips, which you have to hit really hard to keep off the ground. And if you don't keep it off the ground, you are sacrificed.
Oh my god. Max, can I tell you something?
Uh-huh.
So today was a sparring day at my Muay Thai gym. I literally got hit in the crotch harder than I've ever gotten hit in the crotch in my entire life today.
Oh.
I was like, it was my good friend who I've been in a gym with for 3 years now. And it was like no ill will at all.
Yeah.
But
they just goofed.
So he's shorter than I am. He threw a knee at the same time that I threw a kick, like a round kick coming to his side.
No.
And he just put up a knee. He was aiming for my ribs, but because he's shorter than I am, it's way easier to hit my stuff. He hit me so hard, full force in the junk. I was basically like turning.
With momentum.
I was turning into it too. Yeah, that was the first time I got hit so hard that I felt like I might throw up. And I had laying on the floor for like a good minute and a half. I'm fine now. It's all water under the bridge. And it was an accident. I hold no ill will at all. But let me tell you, when you tell me this, these boys chucking medicine balls at each other's stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not happy with this. I don't like this sport.
No, it's wild. And there's like multiple accounts too of players, competitors.
Yeah.
Who would have their hips so bruised that they would have to be lanced and drained. And then cauterized so they could go play in the next match.
Oh my god.
Yeah. But if you don't play, you forfeit and then you're killed.
All right.
So you gotta play. But as I mentioned, the big thing that Pocklepock is known for was being a vehicle for human sacrifice following a loss.
In the Maya area, surviving texts indicate Pocklepock was the setting for mythological battles between the forces of life and death. Because of this allegory, the ball game was a vehicle for human sacrifice, particularly decapitation. A carved stone panel at El Tajín, for example, depicts an individual being sacrificed in a ball court, while another panel at Chichen Itza shows a kneeling ball player who has been decapitated. Serpents and vegetation sprout from his neck, underlining the regenerative, nourishing power of sacrificial blood.
Yeah, this particular piece of art is almost funny because it looks like they just opened a can of like spring snakes from the guy's neck and it's just like woo, shooting out.
Wow, that's so cool. Yeah. Well, I know my next tattoo.
And in the world of Pocklepock, the game served as a vehicle to decide who was the stronger person. and the other would be sacrificed to appease the gods. So in this way, it doesn't seem really dissimilar from the ancient funerary rites that the Roman gladiators participated in, but with the added benefit of ensuring a good harvest or good fertility for the year to come.
Hmm.
Kind of gives a whole new meaning to sudden death.
Oh.
Really bad.
I see what you did there.
There we go. I looked into that one too, because I was like, oh, this could be interesting. And yeah. I, for the life of me, like, could not figure out where sudden death in sports comes from.
Yeah, like where the term comes from?
Yeah.
Hmm. I believe it's sports adopted it from the Super Smash Brothers series, if I'm not mistaken, that they borrowed the terminology.
That's when, like, if you're tied at the end of a stock match.
Yeah, well, if you, you die should... at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
So it's pretty rare. Or if time runs out and you have the same number of lives.
You just get dropped in with, like, one life and 300 damage. Is that it?
Yeah. Yep, yep. And in Smash Ultimate, the screen slowly compresses around you, and if it touches you, you die. It's great. Anyway.
That does sound cool.
We're saving that for the Super Smash Brothers episode of the Pre-Dead Boys podcast.
Are you going to write that one?
There's not a whole lot of death in there, so it's probably never going to happen.
Yeah. I also learned that in some sports that are more dangerous, they'll use the phrase sudden victory instead of sudden death, because they don't want to remind people that, like, these IndyCar drivers could drive into a wall and die immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny just how we toe the line of, like, we want human beings to do really reckless, dangerous things, but also we don't want to remind people that they could die.
Yeah. Luckily, baseball doesn't have sudden death. It just has walk-offs, which is where you just get to walk off the field.
Yeah.
That's all it is. But baseball actually brings us to one of the wildest death-related stories. The story of Ray Chapman. So Chapman is the only baseball player to have ever been killed by a pitch during a game. And I'm going to tell this story in a minute, but I have swung the bat that Ray Chapman was holding when he was killed.
Whoa.
Yeah. Here, read his story first, then I'll tell that.
Ray Chapman, star shortstop for 9 seasons with the Cleveland Indians, might have ended up in the Hall of Fame had he not been fatally injured by a Carl Mays fastball on August 16th, 1920, at the Polo Grounds. Chapman was 0-for-1 when he led off the 5th inning with Cleveland ahead, 3-0. With a count of 1 ball and 1 strike, Chapman, who batted and threw right-handed, hunched as usual over the plate, waiting for the next pitch. The gray blur sliced through the heavy, humid air. Possibly a strike. Chapman did not move. Many of the players and 20,000 fans heard an explosive sound. Babe Ruth said it was audible where he stood far out in right field. Sports writer Fred Lieb, sitting in the downstairs press box about 50 feet behind the umpire, heard a sickening thud. The ball dribbled out toward the pitcher's mound on the first base side. Mays fielded it and threw it to first baseman Wally Pipp for the out, apparently thinking the ball had struck the bat. Chapman had sunk to his knees, his face contorted, blood streaming from his left ear. Chapman died at 4:40 the next morning, following an operation performed by Dr. T.M. Merrigan, surgical director of the institution. Chapman was unconscious after he arrived at the hospital. The blow had caused a depressed fracture in Chapman's head, 3.5 inches long. Dr. Merrigan removed a piece of skull about 1.5 inches square and found the brain had been so severely jarred that blood clots had formed. The shock of the blow had lacerated the brain not only on the left side of the head where the ball struck, but also on the right side where the shock of the blow had forced the brain against the skull. Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, this story is bonkers. And it's crazy that, like, Cleveland was playing the Yankees at this game and, like, Babe Ruth was there.
Yeah.
This is not just some, like, podunk small game somewhere. This is professional baseball. So the pitcher threw submarine. He threw underhand.
Okay.
And so this ball had a lot more velocity coming up than a normal pitch would. And people think that Chapman just lost sight of it because they didn't have lights at this point and it was kind of dark. And it just hit him square in the ear and basically just rocketed his brain to the other side of his skull and killed him.
God, that's so brutal.
Yeah, it's brutal. And I've held the bat that Chapman was holding when he died and swung it because we actually have it here in Columbus.
Really?
Which is very cool, yeah. If you go to a Columbus Clippers game, there are minor league baseball team here. They have like a gorgeous park. It's really neat.
Yeah.
Then you've been in the same building as that bat.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I went on a tour of the stadium at one point, just like a little private tour, which was really cool. And the guy who was doing the tour was just opening up display cases and letting me hold items and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. And he'd be like, yeah, that's like so-and-so's glove from when he debuted in organized baseball. And I'd be like, oh, that's really neat. And then he goes over to this one case that has a bunch of bats in it. And he opens it up and kind of reaches to one in the back and pulls this bat from the back out. And it's like already kind of like a dark, like maple wood almost. It's a little darker.
Okay.
And he gives it to me and he's like, take a few swings with that. So I'm like standing in the middle of like this nice room and kind of taking a few swings with this bat. And he looks at me and he goes, you know whose bat that is? And I'm like, no, how would I know that? He's like, that's Ray Chapman's bat. And I was like, wait, that's the guy who was killed by a pitch. And he's like, yeah, take the barrel, which is like the, you know, main part of the bat.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, spin it around. And so I'm like spinning this bat in my hand. And all of a sudden you see this patch on the bat that's just like almost black from where Chapman had been hit, slumped over, landed face first on the bat, and then just bled out onto the bat.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
They let you hold this thing?
Yeah. And I don't know. It was gross that the guy didn't tell me that beforehand.
Right.
He was like, here, this is this blood bat. Take this.
Were you grossed out? Or were you like, oh, cool? Or some combination?
Yeah, I was like, I like immediately stopped touching that part of the bat.
Yeah.
And was like, oh my God, this is really significant and crazy.
Yeah. Man, that's like 100-year-old blood too.
Yeah, just really dried, chunky stuff. Have you ever seen anything like this, being like a contact sports fan? Or do you know anything about like people dying in sports?
That's actually a concern, is, you know.
Do they shoot that on a delay?
No. I don't believe so. I think it's all live. But there have been deaths in the sport. They're very rare. They're very few and far between. But yeah, there was a guy a couple of years ago, and he was a teammate of Conor McGregor, who died in the octagon. I think he had some kind of freak brain hemorrhage. It was like something really out of left field.
Yeah.
But it was made worse by taking head trauma during the fight.
Yep.
But that's a cause for concern, especially the sport of mixed martial arts is getting better about fair matchmaking and like trying to put equally skilled fighters together. But there's still lots of organizations, including the top organizations, including the UFC, that will kind of book some opportunistic, cash grabby kind of fights that just should not happen. Case in point, like, did you know about the Kimbo Slice versus Dada 5000 fight?
I know Kimbo Slice, but Dada 5000 does not sound familiar.
So both of those guys came up through like the backyard fighting,
fighting YouTube
craze. Yeah. But they fought on a Bellator card. I think this is about 4 or 5 years ago now. But both of them are very old, very out of shape. And it turns out Dada 5000's heart stopped in the middle of that fight.
Oh my
God. He was medically dead during that fight. And Kimbo Slice died within a year of that fight. He's like in his 40s. So there's a lot of these athletes that they definitely take trauma, and some of them, they just keep fighting into their 40s and sometimes their 50s. And then,
oh my God,
I'm sure you've seen boxers too, where they're,
yeah,
you know, they've definitely taken some shots and you can see the effects that it takes on their body and their ability to speak and their mental capacity. So it's no joke. It's like I said, you have to reconcile. If you are a fan of violent sports, you kind of have to reconcile that, Like, this is dangerous. And you got to keep that in mind. You can't be, like, a totally blissfully ignorant fan of sports like that.
Yeah, I was watching, I mean, similar to that, I was watching some stuff on YouTube of this boxer, Moon Sung Kil, who was a Korean fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And he was boxing and just took a shot to the head that hit him in the wrong way. And he died, like, at the Bellagio.
Yeah. Wow.
And there's, like, clips of him, and he's, like, pulling himself up the ropes.
Yeah.
The other guy won the fight by TKO, but he's, like, pulling himself up the ropes, and then he just goes limp. And it's like, oh, God.
Yeah. That's so... That's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's, like, you want to see amazing performances, but it's just sad when it ends in something like that.
And even when things happen accidentally, like, I think about... Was it Chris Benoit who fell during, like, a WWE thing?
Chris Benoit, his special move was the flying headbutt. Needless okay. to say, he took a lot of head trauma. But also, there are accounts that he may have had schizophrenia or some other mental disorder that uh-huh. was probably made worse by opiates and a lot of, like, painkillers and alcohol and other stuff. Yeah. So it's kind of a cocktail of a lot of things. But yeah, I mean...
He fell from the ceiling in, like, a live televised match, right? No, I was incorrect. That was Owen Hart
fell
from the ceiling and died.
Yeah, Chris Benoit also died. Yeah, well, he murdered his wife and child.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of factors to consider, but one of the big ones is he took a lot of head trauma and was not mentally healthy. So it's no joke. We are really not as far removed from the brutal... sort of things that we see in gladiatorial combat and a lot of what we talked about today.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that just as a closing note, and you know, some of the stuff you said earlier, but like death seems so far from sports now. You know, you watch football, and even as violent as that is, you're like, oh, those guys are fine. They're like walking right off the field afterwards. The worst thing that happens is like someone gets like their leg hurt and they have to be carted off, but then everyone like stands and cheers, you know.
Hmm.
But you can go on.
Well, are you going to talk about CTE? And
well, I'm not, but that's also really bad.
Yeah, that's the thing, is football and a lot of other contact sports, not even combat sports, that's a serious concern. How much damage are we doing to our brains and our bodies by just continually hitting each other over and over and over again?
Yeah.
You know, you've seen there's Aaron Hernandez and other people yeah. who have also had a lot of similar problems with a history of all of this head trauma from sports. So yeah, even the sanctified quote unquote sports that are not violent per se, there's still that danger. If
yeah. And like you think about, you know, modern football, like guys slamming into each other like that, like it's not that dissimilar to like jousting,
right?
Which was guys run at very fast speeds at each other, aided by a horse. And then hit each other, but then occasionally, like, something hits the other guy the wrong way, and someone dies. These have been a part of our history for a long time, but it's only been recently that the two rituals of, like, the death and funeral ritual that you see in Roman gladiatorial combat has been separated from sports. You know, and that's probably not a bad thing.
Right.
I would be much less of a fan of sports if the losing team was killed every time.
Yeah. It's good that we're, with all sports, we're kind of heading in a direction where we're trying to prevent death.
Yeah.
We're not, it's not a goal anymore. It's yeah. actually the opposite of what we're trying to achieve. So, you know, we're making strides with medical technology and advances yeah. so that we can prevent some of that.
Yeah. We tend to push death to the fringe in our culture a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And even with CTE, it's like, well, they're alive on the field. It doesn't matter if they get hurt afterwards or after they retire, you know.
Right.
But, you know, when you think about it, most athletes are regularly pushing their insanely developed bodies to insane limits. And it's kind of remarkable that this doesn't happen more often, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of a bummer note to end on. Considering, like, the Sixers are playing right now, and I'm really excited about that.
Oh, yeah.
But
your boy Joel.
Yeah, you better come to my wedding.
Doing big things.
Yeah.
He's busy right now. It might take him a while to RSVP.
To get back. Yeah.
God willing, he'll be there.
Yeah.
Before we get into the post show credits here, can I share with you my favorite Joel Embiid quote? I gotta look it up to make sure I don't botch it. I like kicking people's ass and literally be in their faces, letting them know that they suck, they are trash, and that I'm better than them.
Joel Embiid rules. He's like the nicest guy on the planet.
Yeah, he's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
But then he plays basketball and he's just like, fuck everybody else. I'm better.
He like can't swim.
Oh, really?
And the Sixers made him go down a water slide at one point.
Aw.
And he like is like, there's like video of him climbing out of the top of the slide.
Oh, man. Because he's huge too, isn't he?
He's like 7'3".
Yeah, jeez. Ah, poor Joel. Anyway, thank you, Joel Embiid, for existing. But also, thank you for listening to our podcast. We love hearing from y'all. Talk to us. We're on Instagram and Twitter at PreDeadBoys. You can email us at predeadboys@gmail.com. You can also search PreDeadBoys Podcast on Facebook and join our really rad Facebook group. Sometimes people send us listener questions. For example, we have a question from friend of the show, Lucas.
Lucas.
His name's actually Isaac.
Oh, also in the wedding.
Oh, nice. Does he know that yet?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, okay. Cool. It's like, are you making all your announcements here? Isaac, I mean, Lucas, he says, hey, who do you want to MC for your funeral?
Man, I don't know. What's a good answer to this?
There is one undeniable answer in my mind. I can think of a lot of good ones, but there is one choice that if I can choose one man to bring the party to my funeral, it's got to be Andrew WK.
Yeah, that would be really good.
The man is so full of light and energy, and that's what I want my funeral to be. I want it to be a celebration of a life well lived and like people having a good time remembering me, but then also moving on with their lives and being inspired to to press on. And I feel like I can't do that without Andrew WK.
No one would be bummed out at your funeral. Yeah. Well, I don't know. People would be sad, but...
I want it to be bittersweet. Yeah. I want it to be like, yeah, it sucks, but
he's got that pizza guitar up there.
If he could solo on the pizza guitar while giving an inspirational speech. You. Yeah. He doesn't even need to talk about me. Just talk about partying, and I would be totally satisfied with that.
I want Ben Stiller to do mine in Zoolander character. Do full Ugoogaloogie.
Yeah, so you're just going to go full slapstick for yours.
I think that'd be good. I like Zoolander a lot.
That's really good.
There are parts that are very problematic, but also it's extremely funny.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's good.
I sound like a real jackass right now.
No, that's a good answer. Thank you, Isaac, for sending that excellent question. If you want to support the podcast, there's a few ways you can do that. Number one, tell a friend about this pod. We don't advertise it. It's just word of mouth. Number two, you can tip us $3 or more at ko-fi.com/predeadboys. We got a tip from Michael. It just says Michael. I don't know.
Oh, thanks, Michael.
Which I know a few Michaels, but I don't know if it was one of those Michaels or a Michael I don't even know. But thank you nonetheless. He says, love the show. Keep it up.
We'll do, Michael.
Yeah, we will. Thank you very much. You can also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher, and we will read it on an episode. But maybe the single most important thing you can do to support this podcast. I don't know how much that's peaking the mic right now. That's probably blowing it away. is to go vote for us for Best Entertainment Podcast and Podcast of the Year at the Columbus Podcast Awards.
Woo.
So right now, if you're listening to this, by the time this episode comes out, you are able to go to columbuspodcastawards.com and vote for us. Again, we're in the Best Entertainment category, and you can write in whatever you like for the Podcast of the Year category. Well, not whatever you like. It has to
probably
be from
be in Columbus.
Right. So I will submit for your consideration that the best choice is us. So go and do that.
It'd be very cool.
Yes.
We're really proud of this. We have a lot of fun doing it.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely. And it's going to be fun to hang out with a bunch of other weirdos from Columbus who do podcasts and have a good time.
Yeah, that's another thing. The ceremony is going to be August 25th at Gateway Film Center, which is definitely one of my favorite just places in Columbus.
Yeah, it rolls.
It's one of the best. It's one of the best theaters here, and we have a few really, really good locally run theaters.
Yep.
But that's going to be a good time. So mark your calendar August 25th for that, and come hang out with us and some other podcasters. Should be a good time. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. And that's going to do it for us.
You know, Dorian, as we're getting ready to close this down, this episode feels like a real home run.
Well, we made it 31 episodes before Dorian finally quit the podcast. You are such a fucker. I hope you're proud of yourself. I hope you're real proud of that.
Why not?
It's really bad. Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're gonna rot.
I might take my shoes off for this one. It's going to get stinky. Ironically, this is the first dance.
This is going to be the first dance at your wedding?
Yeah.
With your betrothed. I'm sure she'll love that.
It's just impossible to do any sort of physical activity, too.
Max, I love you. What should our first dance be?
Weep, 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 weep.
Do you think if you said to her, like, well, you know that one battle song in Earthbound that goes, weep, boop, do you think that she'd do anything other than, like, quietly judge you and make a weird face at you?
Stare at me.
Like, are you fucking serious? You get back on track.
Oh, look, the Get Tickets link is live.
Are you going to buy a ticket?
I'm going to get two tickets.
Don't. We Why? Might get comped, dude. We're going to win Best Podcast of the Year.
They're free. You just click the free button.
Oh, all right. Yeah, fuck it. Hey, wait a second. You got two tickets. How do you know you get a plus one?
Take away your plus one. It's a wedding.
You can't take my plus one. Just because you're getting married and shit.
Gonna swab the plus one from the records? Dude, the fucking guest list. The spreadsheet that we have is insane.
Oh, you made one for your guest list?
We made one. I have a... We were looking at the guest list stuff, and she was like, well, we're at, like, just over 300. Part of that is because I keep adding, like, Andrew WK and Joel Embiid. And, like... A lot of people in here who are, like, not actually
don't
anything. Carly Rae Jepsen is in
it.
Here.
Don't say it. Have faith that they will show.
I was like, even if Carly Rae Jepsen, like, sends us, like, a fun hat, that would be great.
Oh, that'd be incredible.
Or if she shows up with Joel Embiid.
Like, with him? Romantically?
With, or, like, Joel
ship,
Embiid.
Do you ship Joel Embiid and...
The Jep and the Bead?
Yeah, and Jeps. Make it happen.
Call him Carell.
Carell?
Carell.
I don't know. There's probably a clever or...
Jolpson.
Jolpson?